but the bank public may be 20 congregation for a meeting day to participate this Bible study this evening and tomorrow evening if God wills.
I've known Brother Joel Gwynn for several years. He used to be a member here at the Skyline Church in Hopkinsville, and I know nothing but good concerning my brother. And I'm happy to participate with him in this study tonight. There are several things I want to address, and he saw fit to do so himself, some background material, he said, and I want to give some correspondence on this. Whereas he verbally said some things that happened, I want to give you some direct quotes as we go to some background material. Early this year, I proposed to my brother Gwynn that he take the two nights in the affirmative because of the seriousness of this position that he has taken that forces him in conscience to divide the church over it, to make it an issue of fellowship, to press an opinion and a scruple to the point of division, which the church is funny, almost a year ago practiced. So why not take the two nights and give the reasons for this very serious position that you've taken? He said, no, you're to affirm one night too. Well, fine, I agreed to that. And I sent him this proposition, which is there on the screen. The scriptures teach that when fornication occurs, the innocent spouse, one bound by the marriage bond, is given the right to repudiate the fornicating mate to whom he has been bound by God and to remarry. Fornication takes place. Jesus says that the innocent spouse who puts away for fornication and marries again does not commit adultery. And there you have the three parts: fornication, the innocent spouse, the right to remarry. Brother Gwynn replied, and these are direct quotes. Now, what he said by memory was not totally inaccurate, but some of it was misrepresentation, as you'll see from these quotes. I would be willing to sign this proposition myself, he said. And I wrote back, you do not believe this proposition that admits of no exceptions. And if you would affirm this proposition, I wrote him, in debate, I would moderate for you in the debate. I went on to say, you put a condition to that proposition. You will affirm it only if it is worded like this. Now, these are things that I wrote to my brother. The scriptures teach that when fornication occurs, the innocent spouse, one bound by the marriage bond, is given the right to put away the fornicating mate to whom he has been bound by God, provided that he has not been previously divorced by his ungodly mate, or words to that effect, and to remarry. Now, this is what you believe, I wrote. You do not believe my proposition as worded because, as it is worded, it admits of no conditions or exceptions. Now, there's the full quote. There's the full quote. Partial quotes, as far as the words are concerned, are the truth, but out of a context. Brother Gwynn replied, I cannot deny your proposition as worded. If you will add the caps portion added below, I will deny your proposition. The scriptures teach that when fornication occurs, the innocent spouse, even if he has been previously divorced by his ungodly mate, one bound by the marriage bond is given the right to put away the fornicating mate to whom he has been bound by God and to remarry. There's where we differ. He's adding a proviso to what the Lord said. And that's why we differ in this debate. I believe that, and I'll debate it, and I said I'll moderate for you, but he doesn't believe it unless there's a proviso there. I will debate that, provided. Brother Gwynn wrote, since you will not write your affirmative in a manner that addresses the issues of our differences, you recall his making remarks in his opening speech, Along that line, I will accept your original offer to be in the affirmative for both evenings. I'm explaining to you why I'm not in the affirmative either night of this debate. Now look at the two propositions side by side. First, the one that I sent him. The scriptures teach that when fornication, there's your fornication, when it occurs, the innocent spouse, one bound by the marriage bond, is given the right to repudiate the fornicating mate to whom he has been bound by God and to remarry. He says the Bible teaches, and this is the proposition for tonight and tomorrow, that if a man puts away his scriptural wife for a reason other than fornication and then commits fornication, the original wife may not remarry. What do we have up above? Fornication on the part of a guilty mate, the innocent spouse given the right to put away a fornicating mate and remarry, and remarries, and he has fornication committed. What he calls the original wife is my innocent spouse, and he admits and would agree she's the innocent spouse. I'll agree she's the original wife. And he says she may not remarry. Fornication has occurred. Jesus gives the right for that cause. Jesus used three words, except for fornication. Many of my brethren are adding to that, except for fornication, in about eight more, and provided that there has not been a previous divorce. So they're adding, and he had a chart about adding to God's word. My brother, thou art the man. My brother could have a one-man debate. He gets up and affirms my proposition. He says he believes it, and I'm going to moderate for him, and then he gets up 30 more minutes and denies it. Why? Because it allows the innocent spouse without his proviso attached, which says even if he has been previously divorced by his ungodly mate. So he's going to affirm it and deny it at the same time, provided his proviso is where he wants it. Jesus' words imply that whosoever puts away his wife for fornication and remarries does not commit adultery. Matthew 19:9, and well agreed. What he did say implies this. My opponent's words imply that whosoever puts away his wife for fornication, provided that he was not previously put away and remarries, does not commit adultery. Now who's adding to God's word? If one denies this human proviso, some, not all. Some brethren agree with Brother Joel on his proposition. They're not willing at all. They do not intend at all to do any disfellowshipping, but there's some brethren, if you don't accept their proviso, they disfellowship you. My proposition is worded as what I believe in practice, and this is where I take my stand. Here it is again. The scriptures teach that when fornication occurs, the innocent spouse, one bound by the marriage bond, is given the right to repudiate the fornicating mate to whom he has been bound by God and to remarry. This is the principle given by Jesus in Matthew 19:9, the first part. And this is what I've preached since I started preaching in 1943. This is where I take my stand. This is where we all should unite, brethren. This is where we all should unite. I wrote to Brother Gwynn, you need to understand, my brother, that the position I hold does not draw lines of fellowship. I'm perfectly willing for you to hold your scruple against the innocent's repudiating and remarrying when fornication is committed against him by a mate who has already put him away. Why am I willing to do that? Because such an innocent one does not sin in not putting away and remarrying. And when Brother Gwynn and I and another brother here, by his request, we met together and studied for 2.5 hours, and among my closing words were that if your spouse should put you away, your wife should put you away for any cause except fornication and marry another, I would not try in the least to change your mind because your conscience says you cannot marry again. And I would respect that, and I'm sure my brother recalls that that is exactly what I told him. That's what I'm saying right here. But when you bind your scruple on others and disfellowship those who disagree with your scruple, as you have already done, obviously I cannot fellowship that. let's correct something right here and remove some baggage that very likely a number of you, my good brethren, our good brethren, have brought with you. I've heard from a number of sources this particular matter I'm bringing up right here. There's a particular website that has a reader's response section, and the webmaster thought that one particular excerpt from one particular message was worthy of publication, which reads, I'm surprised that Bill Reese takes that position. I wish he was man enough to meet a seasoned preacher rather than insisting on a boy just starting meet him. This seems evidence to me that he knows the weakness of his position. Now, back in January, Brother Joel and another brother and I had a Bible study, and at the close of it he said, are you willing to debate this, not debate me, debate this at Swanee? In the context in which he said that, I and the other brother understood that he meant him, and I said yes. And we went on and talked about it a few minutes just before we broke up our meeting, and that was the understanding. When he called me two nights later, we talked about each one of us and what we would do to some extent in the debate. I still understood that's what he had in mind. But he said that we would like to get a more seasoned preacher to do the debating to represent the Swanee Church. And we thank you, brethren, at Hopkinsville should also have half of the debate. I wrote this one sentence. Now this is what I said, and this is a quote. I didn't insist on a thing. I said, inasmuch as you have withdrawn your proposal for you and me to debate at Swanee, consider the matter closed. That's not just part of it, that's the letter. Now who's insisting on what? Who has any terms and restrictive matters? This is what my brother replied. If you are insistent on making restrictive conditions for this debate, then I need to know what they are. Please respond with your terms. That's part of the letter. See the word insistent? See the word restrictive? See the word terms? I replied, you are the one who proposed a debate with the terms that you and I do the debating at Swanee. I didn't make any conditions at all, restrictive or otherwise, for this debate that you proposed. I simply agreed to your proposal. You know good and well that I had no terms regarding what you proposed. I didn't insist on a single thing. I simply agreed to what you proposed. He wrote back, I'm totally 100% willing to debate the issue on the terms that you originally agreed to. That's what we're doing tonight. Now what purpose is served in the webmaster's publicizing this evil surmising of a brother who calls him a boy, and I would feel insulted that one of your brothers considers you a boy. Brother Joel Gwynn's a man. He's recently a father for the second time, and he's debating a man. We're both men. I debated an older brother once, Brother Joel. He kept calling me boy. I know how you might feel with some brother thinking you're just a boy. Brother Gwynn is a man. All three Gwynns. If I say Brother Joel, I'm just trying to not put anything on Brother Greg or on his son. There is no purpose other than that, but defamation of character to make me look bad. But I remind all of us, brethren, we need to think about this. Not just gospel preachers, all Christians. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, in the first four verses, verse 3 in particular, he says, but with me it's a very small thing that I should be judged of man's judgment, of you or of man's judgment. I don't care what you Corinthians think about me, Paul says. I don't care what others think about me. It matters not what I think about myself. I'm paraphrasing. For he that judges me is the Lord. So it's a small matter that someone wants to pin on me, insisting on something and making restrictions and having terms. I just simply said, since you've withdrawn the proposal, consider the matter closed. In more direct reference to some of the things that our brother said, and let me make this clear for any who may not be experienced in the matters of public debate, the negative is required, as our brother said, to reply to the arguments that are made. He is not required to call for one chart or to repeat one phrase that was said. I'm not obligated to take 30 minutes and repeat what he said. Obviously, I'd have no time of my own. I'm obligated to meet his arguments. So I'm going to give some slides here. I want you to see why I deny this proposition. How much time? Yes, thank you. We'll get started on these reasons. Some of them overlap, I admit. But I want you to see why I deny this proposition, and this will answer a lot of the charts, even in particular. Again, we look at the proposition. The Bible teaches that if a man puts away a scriptural wife for a reason other than fornication, and then commits fornication, the original wife may not remarry. Now, I deny that proposition. Among other reasons, to get started, Jesus never said that. What he said was, if a man puts away his wife for a reason other than fornication, whoever marries that wife commits adultery. Jesus said that if a man puts away his wife for a reason other than fornication, that he that marrieth her commits adultery. And now we're getting to the heart of matters. Our brother made an argumentation, and those with him make the same argumentation. He presents two different scenarios, one that Jesus treated and one that we're treating in this debate, and confuses the two. He takes a phrase out of a sentence, out of a context concerning the scenario that Jesus treated, and applies it to an entirely different scenario, such as his proposition presents. And now keep that in mind, a confusing of scenarios. Jesus was not asked about the scenario of this proposition. Fornication was no part of the question put to Jesus by the Pharisees. They asked, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Nothing about for fornication, pre or post anything. Nothing about remarrying and the put away wife and permissions that she may or may not have. That is not what Jesus was asked about. He was not asked if it is lawful for a wife to remarry who has been put away by her mate who, after putting away, committed fornication. That was not asked of Jesus. Now, we need to treat that problem with principles from what Jesus did treat, but they're two entirely different scenarios, and you're not supposed to have that in mind, but if you analyze what's going on in the debate, you'll see it more and more clearly. What Jesus said in Matthew 19:9a gives the innocent one against whom adultery has been committed. Turn in your New Testaments and look at Mark 10 and verse 11. If a man puts away his wife, if a man puts away his wife, what? And marries again, or marries another, commits adultery against her. Whosoever puts away his wife and marries another committeth adultery against her. And if she herself, American Standard Version, and if she herself puts away her husband, she commits adultery. Adultery has been committed against this wife, and the right to repudiate for fornication and to remarry is hers. The proposition denies this, so I deny it. I deny for that reason. He anticipated that I'd say something about no time limit. I would suppose so. If I took his position, I wouldn't want this brought up either. But Jesus put no time limit on when the fornication has to be committed. It matters not when it's committed, before or after anything, pre or post anything. We hear a lot about pre this and post that. You don't read that from Jesus, do you? That's why I deny this proposition. It matters not when fornication is committed, before or after anything. Jesus was asked about the cause, and that is what he addressed. To go beyond what Jesus said in the context in which he said it is to misrepresent the teaching of Jesus and divine human legislation. I deny this proposition because it makes the divine permission to hinge upon what... Let this all soak in. This is very simple, but very germane to the issue. It makes, this proposition does, that I'm denying, it makes the divine permission to hinge upon what an ungodly spouse does. It lets what an ungodly spouse It lets what an ungodly person or spouse, what he does, cancel what God permits. It deprives the innocent spouse the right to do what Jesus gave him the right to do. That's why I oppose this proposition. It confuses the scenario that Jesus treated with an entirely different one, which he did not treat and which is in the proposition tonight. It attributes to the Bible a man-made scruple. Where in the Bible can one read that because a maid did an ungodly act that is put away for just any cause, that now the innocent spouse may not do what God gave him the right to do? Where do we read that? And yet that's what this position requires. That everything hinge upon what an ungodly man did toward an innocent spouse or mate, which is sin and which God did not approve of and which did not affect the marriage bond. My brother, in answering the questions, Joel, I was thinking you'd answer the questions in your first speech. Be sure and remember to do that in your second speech. The questions we sent to each other. And one of those questions he answers correctly, that the marriage bond is still intact, or he says they're still bound to each other. And yet, what this ungodly one does takes away the right from the innocent spouse. I deny this proposition because the Lord did not say that an innocent spouse may put away for fornication, put away his mate for fornication, unless the fornicator first unscripturally had put the mate away and then committed fornication. You see these provisos that are added to what the Lord said? Jesus did not say that. He did not say that an innocent mate may put away a fornicating mate unless that fornicating mate first unscripturally put him away and then later committed fornication. The proposition denies what Jesus teaches in Mark 10, verse 11. When man commits fornication, he does it against his original wife. He talked about order, so we're dealing with that. The order, and I have more material specifically on order if I have time to get to it, but notice here the order of occurrence in Matthew 19 and A is still the same for the woman in the proposition above. You have a scriptural marriage, you have a mate committing fornication, and you have the original wife, the innocent wife, putting away a fornicating mate as Jesus permitted. Well, now, but we got some provisos we throw in there. Jesus didn't. Yes, but provided that this and provided that. Jesus didn't. And I'm not going to. And none of us should be willing to. And I'm calling upon some of my brethren who need to remove their provisos, and we can be united. Instead of dividing the church over some of their own man-made concocted provisos. He didn't read that in the scriptures when he gave us Matthew and Mark and Luke, and he says three times, but he never read his provisos in his three passages. They're not there. The husband's actions do not negate the marriage covenant. By putting away a scriptural wife without the cause of fornication, the man breaks only the physical marriage. Now listen carefully as the debate continues. My opponent has already used the phrase about marriage, but he's not defining it. He's not defining. He's talking about sundering a marriage. What does he mean by that? That has not been defined, but we'll define as we go along. We'll hone that and sharpen it down where we can see that though a marriage relationship has been sundered, the marriage bond is still intact. Keep that in mind. He remains bound to his wife. Check that last phrase again. Number 13, the husband's actions do not negate the marriage covenant. By putting away his scriptural wife without the cause of fornication, the man breaks only the physical marriage relationship. The physical, one flesh relationship. Obviously, he walks away or sends her away, and that one flesh relationship no longer obtains. But he still remains bound to his wife, and all of us agree on that. I would assume everyone in this audience does. I know my opponent brother does. Matthew 19:8 teaches that an innocent spouse may put away his bound mate on the grounds of fornication and marry another. That's where I take my stand. I deny this proposition because fornication is still against a bound mate, even if that fornication is committed after one leaves the bound mate. That's what we read in Mark 10, verse 11. Whosoever puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. He put her away. At some time later, maybe the next day, the next hour, the next year, doesn't matter, he married another, still being bound to his wife. She's still bound to him. He didn't have the cause of fornication. There's no fornication or no cause of fornication in evidence in any of these passages in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in the putting away. Later, he marries someone else, and now he is committing, present tense, should he do this, put her away, and should he marry another, he is now committing adultery against her. Why? Because they're still bound. And that's what my brother and I believe, and I would thank all of us here tonight. Fornication is not rendered irrelevant. And I'm going to charge my brother's position with making fornication after a ungodly, unscriptural putting away for just any cause except fornication. I'm charging this position with making fornication, which is terrible before, all of a sudden is totally irrelevant. You're not going to hear anything about it. All you're going to hear about is put away, a put away woman. We got a box here, the put away woman, and we're going to put everyone in there. And if you're in that box, you've had it. Don't whine. You've had it. You're stuck. You're hung. You're in the box that we call the put away. I want to show in the course of this debate, as we have time, that our brethren are creating a category, a class of people called the put away. And all of a sudden, fornication is irrelevant. Fornication is not rendered irrelevant just because it is committed after leaving the innocent mate. The expression, whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery, is no more an absolute statement than is the expression, get it? Whoever puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery. Luke 16 and 18a. Neither are absolutes. Does any of us believe that it says whoever puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery? What if he puts away his wife for fornication and there was no previous divorce? Does he commit adultery? Well, no, he doesn't. Well, you're making an absolute.
16:18b, would you make it out of 8?
The presence of fornication alters the consequences of the one just as it does the other. The put-away woman in Matthew 19:9 is the victim of a particular circumstance and scenario that's presented to Jesus. In Matthew 19:3, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And there's no cause of fornication evident. No cause of fornication is in evidence. She's still bound. No one may marry her. Being put away is not a classification. It is the consequence of someone else's actions. Let me make a statement right here in the closing moments. Jesus never directs a statement of what may or may not be done to a put away woman. What, Brother Reese? You just look at it. Look at Matthew 19:9, for example. Jesus directs himself to whosoever shall put away his wife, marry another, commit adultery, and he that. He never directs himself to the put away woman, say, you may or you may not do anything. Think about that. As you hear all this talk about you, you're a put away woman, and you can't do a thing. Have about a minute? There are a number of these reasons, and I'll continue my next speech, the Lord willing. Not one may marry the put-away woman of Matthew 19:9. No one may marry her, not on the basis of her marital status, but on the basis of the absence of cause of fornication on the part of her husband upon putting her away. That's where Jesus puts it. That's where we have to leave it. Time? Absolutely nothing, I've just made this statement, we'll close on it, nothing in Matthew, Mark, and Luke is directed to what a put-away woman, a wife, may or may not do, but the proposition says she may not remarry. Look at these passages, brethren. There's nothing there that Jesus directs to the put-away woman saying she may or may not do something. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Brother Reeves. We appreciate your good attention to the things that have been said. We've finished the first half of our discussion for tonight. We're going to take about a 10-minute break and ask you again, if you don't have any business out there to the restrooms or anything else, please stay in this room. We're going to try to reconvene in 10 minutes. We need to do that so that we can close in a reasonable hour. Thank you very much.